What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast, The Real Rundown, show where we talk about movies and TV shows and anything that's been on our radar lately. This week, I'm here with my special guest, Paul. What's up, Paul? Welcome to the show.
What's up? Thank you for having me on again.
No problem. This week, you guys might notice that Pedro and Scott are both MIA, but there's no doubt they'll be back. But fear not, they'll be back on the next episode, and we're going to get into some new content. For this special episode, Paul and I are going to do a deep dive into the show Fallout, which has premiered on Amazon Prime not too long ago, and we just both finished the series last night, so we're going to catch up on that, give our thoughts, and then anything else that's sort of been that you've been watching, what's going on?
So this Fallout kind of made me think to something we talked about a while back, Twisted Metal.
Oh, yeah.
And how these video game adaptations are getting better and better. And the quality is really showing. And now the next one after this is what, Warhammer, right? I think that's going to be another prime one, too. Yeah, I think that's with Henry Cavill.
Oh, like, that's right.
Yeah, so now Fallout kind of showed Amazon and Prime like what can be done with good quality. So now Warhammer, you know, has a high bar to set to go.
Is that another Prime show?
Yeah, it's going to be Amazon Prime. It's going to they're producing or whatever, and it's we'll see. We'll see how the adaptation goes.
I know I've read. I don't know the exact details, but in the pipeline, there's also a God of War show. I think that's also on Amazon Prime, if I'm not mistaken. And then there's another PlayStation series, and as well as like a Zelda film, I think, that has also been announced.
I've actually been on a kick. I got Paramount because we've been on...
I got it too.
Oh, you got Paramount?
Yeah.
I got it during, I think it was like Black Friday deal, and we got it for Survivor. So the whole family's been on a Survivor kick.
Like the reality show?
Yeah. Scott talked about it last week.
I
was like, we've been on that kick. So I was able to see, I think Halo was on there.
Halo is on there.
I checked out like an episode or two, and it just didn't grab me. It was kind of like bland.
It didn't grab anybody. It's a total dud.
Yeah, and it's already got second season.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about watching season two, but it's just like, I just couldn't do it. I don't know. Like, there's really nothing. Number one, I don't really care or know much about the Halo lore. It wasn't really like a favorite game of mine. So, yeah, I'm just not super invested. And then, you know, the reviews and haven't been great.
I felt like Fallout, I mean, we'll get into it more, but before we jump off, I felt like Fallout was a nice mix between like Twisted Metal and Last of Us. It had like some real dope seriousness to it, had some like really deep beats, but at the same time, it was playful and fun. And Twisted Metal was just like solely playful and fun, and Last of Us was super deep and like, you know, suspenseful. So I think Fallout was a really good blend of the two like that. But other things before we get into Fallout, man. So you went to go see Civil War. What'd you think?
I saw Civil War. I saw it on opening night, which I wouldn't be able to tell you the last film I saw on opening night. I usually avoid opening night just because I don't like all the crowds. But I was super hyped to see this movie, and then my wife was also excited to see it, so I booked some tickets in advance, and we saw it at an AMC, but it was in a Dolby Cinema theater. I don't know if you've been in one of those, but the image and the sound is just, you know, way, way better than a standard theater. The movie left me a little bit conflicted, so I didn't... It was very different than what the trailer suggests. It is not... I don't know how much you want me to go into it, so I'll just give a little bit without giving too much away, but it's not really a war movie or a big... There are, like, set pieces, but I thought it was more of a road trip movie, where you're following these three or four journalists across the country, and they make these stops, And then you sort of meet these characters at each of the stops as they sort of continue on the road. And their ultimate goal is to interview the president of the United States.
That's Nick Offerman, right? Or Offerman, whatever.
It's that guy. He's the guy from Parks and Rec. That's kind of the movie, but it's ultra realistic in its violence, in its gunfire. Like, the guns sound like real guns. The editing is really good, where they'll cut from like a nice quiet scene to just gun blast, and you'll jump out of your seat. So it is visceral, and it is intense, and it feels very authentic, and it feels very real on screen. So the director and cinematographer do a really good job. Like, every person feels like a real person, if that makes sense.
You really feel the stakes then. Like, you feel the stakes with these people that you're following around.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very emotional movie, too. But again, it's not a big war movie where you're fighting, where you're seeing, you know, liberals versus conservatives. Like, it's nothing like that. It's nothing like that. So I don't think it's anything that's going to politically divide people. It's not a political film. You can read into it for sure, but I don't think it's a divisive film in that way. But it is, yeah, it will leave you considering what you just watched. I felt like, as a whole, I had a hard time figuring out what the movie was trying to communicate. But if just looking at it piece by piece, I thought it was brilliant.
I think I remember seeing an interview with the director, and he was purposefully left it ambiguous, and that's why he had California and Texas teaming up. So It left it politically ambiguous, so you couldn't blame one side or the other. It wasn't about that. He didn't want to make it about being political. It was more about the characters and the story behind it.
Yeah, I think more into that, you know, the whole people here, you know, it's California and Texas teaming up, they make up the Western forces, and they immediately dismiss it as fiction. But he actually said in an interview, if you see that those two, you know, in the film, the country is in such a state where the president is so bad that those two states, with all the differences, are able to come together. And if you can't imagine a world where California and Texas ever come together, then that's the problem.
Yeah. Wow. That's a big message.
So I thought that was cool. The movie's cool. Like, in all of the scenes, you rarely know who's fighting who and what they're fighting for. And like, you don't really know. You're just in the moment. There's literally a scene where the guy's like, it's a sniper trying to kill another sniper, and the reporter is there with him, and he's like, who are you guys with? Who's giving you the orders? And he's like, I'm a guy, I'm trying to kill that guy, and he's trying to kill me. And like, so they leave it ambiguous in that way. They do hint at some things, but it's very subtle, and it just leaves it up to your imagination how you want to interpret. But I definitely recommend it. I recommend all of Alex Garland's movies. They're all really good.
What were some of his other movies?
Well, he wrote 28 Days Later.
Okay. This was an A24 movie, right?
Yeah.
But he directed Ex Machina, too.
He did Ex Machina. That was his first one. He did Annihilation. He did Men, which Men I haven't seen.
He did Dread. Not the Sylvester Stallone one, the actual real gritty good one.
Yeah. So he has he has an excellent track record.
Sidetrack. They're actually making it 20 years later. I don't know if you heard about that.
I'm pumped for that, because those movies rock.
Yeah.
but yeah, I'm a big fan of his. That's misleading. I'm not a big fan of his, but I see his work, and I admire it, so I wanted to see this as well.
Wasn't there something that he was going to retire after this?
Yeah, what is that? Is he going to retire after this?
I could have sworn I heard him say, like, you know, he's going to take some time, and he's probably going to retire after this.
Yeah, like he was tired of just like he's just done with filmmaking. I don't know if he meant like as a director and just going back to writing. I don't know. I read the headline and I kind of just dismissed it, but I have no idea. Hopefully not. His stuff is good.
So for me, I actually got to check out Godzilla X Kong.
Sick.
And it is what it is. You know, it's like it's a funny, fun popcorn movie that makes absolutely no sense at times. So many plot holes.
Oh yeah.
There's another inner Earth inside of an inner Earth, and man, it's ridiculous. They give Kong the Infinity Gauntlet, basically, and it's like
I saw he gets the robot arm.
Yeah, and it's like they saw a Marvel movie. And they're like, yeah, let's throw that on his hand too. And they just had it like in a warehouse, just chilling, already built. It wasn't even like they built it purposely for it. They were like, yeah, we've been messing with the tech. We got in the warehouse. One point, they have a dentist come in and like messing with Kong's tooth. So it's like, yeah, like of course this is all out of context, but it's just like giving you
it's
like
probably better out of context.
And I'm a Godzilla fan, so like I'm not a big Kong fan. I like Godzilla, and I had the pleasure of actually seeing Godzilla Minus One in the theater, and that was super intense. Like that reminded me of the 2014 Godzilla, where it was like just little snippets and taste of Godzilla until the big reveal. And that build up the anxiety and the anticipation. And Godzilla Minus One was like a big character, like slow reveal, slow burn too. That it was a really great movie.
Yeah, I felt like that movie was more like about the characters and Godzilla is just some terror happening in the background.
And Godzilla wasn't like an anti-hero like they tried to make him out in this movie. He was just straight up. He didn't care. You know,
right,
like
he was yeah.
And like you were saying with Civil War, like you kind of felt the stakes with these people. You were following them around. It felt like real people you were dealing with. Where like these big movies, it's like 20 people just got stepped on while he's like knocking over the pyramid in Egypt. You know, it's like it was nuts.
No respect.
But huge contrast. So I'm a father, right? And I got my daughter. And a huge contrast of things that we watched this weekend. All those big Bluey fans out there. Bluey's a big like popular kids show.
Yeah.
And they just released their super like long episode that actually might be the show's finale.
I heard that because they announced like he's moving or something. I don't know anything about this. I don't even remember how this got on my radar.
I think the creators and the writers are just like it's a super popular show and they're just overbaked. They're overworked and they just need a break. So they're going on like an extended hiatus. So this was going to be a big, like, usually the episodes are like 7 minutes long. This was like a half an hour episode.
Wow.
But like the wholeness and goodness of that. And then in the same week, me and my daughter watched X-Men 97. The last episode. Did you check that out?
Oh, she watches that?
Yeah.
No. I haven't been able to catch up because.
You didn't see the last episode?
I've only seen the first two because my IPTV streaming service has not updated that show for some reason. I don't have Disney.
It was intense. It was, you know how they like did cool things with Cyclops and like cool use of his powers? They did that basically in this last episode for Gambit.
Oh, sick.
And he was a super good hero, man. But it was a very intense like love triangle. Like it was just intense.
Wow.
It was pretty nuts. But it was really good. And it was a very dark episode, too.
Okay. Yeah.
So for me, it was a huge contrast of Bluey, like, you know, like.
And then X-Men.
You know, and then X-Men. It was just like, wow.
I heard.
But X-Men's been good. It's been really good.
Yeah. And I heard they renewed for a few seasons already. They're doing like 2 and 3. That's what I heard. I don't know if it's.
Probably because they already started talking about like mid-season break or finale, whatever. And then the second half is going to have a lot of cameos.
Oh, okay. That'll be dope.
They're probably going to do like Marvel did the What If, and they're coming out with like a third and fourth season, I think. So they saw how popular X-Men was. I have no doubt that they're going to extend it.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I thought initially it was a one-time run, but then I heard they were extending it, so I was like, okay. But
it's crazy
not over
how
though,
long.
Right? You said that was the finale? No,
I think it's like the mid-season.
Okay.
I think there's going to be either 8 or 10 episodes. I don't know how many passed so far. Maybe 4. So maybe there's about 8.
Okay. Oh, really? Only 4 so far?
Let me double check that. But I think...
because I watched the first 2, which I guess they premiered simultaneously.
But it's been really good. I mean, I liked What If as well. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's, they're up to episode 6.
Okay, yeah, it says 10 total.
Yeah, so I guess that was the mid-season, the Gambit one.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch that.
But it's ridiculous how long it takes. Like, I didn't know it takes this long to produce animation, even more so than live action.
Really? Is that...
Yeah, some of these movies take forever to make, and the animation is, like, ridiculous.
Yeah, I guess because they have to build everything. Where you don't have actors just sort of standing in front of a camera and, you know, capturing them. But yeah, I didn't realize how much work went into just like a 25-minute episode. And the animation is, you know, it's very similar to the original animation with like a little bit of a kicker, but it's kind of the same.
People are saying it's a little more like anime-ish.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's like the old one, but with like a little... and I could see it in some parts, like with the explosion and the type of fighting. It feels a little anime-ish.
Yeah, yeah. But, I'll have to check that out.
Really good job, I think, they've done bringing this back. I mean, it's been gone for so many years, and they just brought it back, and it's like, it hit like fire. It was really good.
Yeah, that's... you never know how these things are going to turn out, but when they hit... When they hit. And, speaking of hits, let's move on to the main topic, because Fallout dropped last week, and I was a little bit skeptical whether that was going to hit or not. I would not have thought that it would be as good as it is. So, did you play the Fallout games? Or?
No, I came into this kind of blind. I mean, I played a little bit of Halo. I played Last of Us. Obviously Twisted Metal, but when it came to Fallout, I never really played Fallout.
Just missed it. Yeah, so...
Fallout was always an Xbox thing, right?
No, it was a PC thing, and then Bethesda, this company, they bought the rights to the game, and it was multi-platform. It's been an Xbox thing just within the last 2 or 3 years. When Microsoft purchased Bethesda. Few years ago, so it's recent. I got into it back in 2009. I played Fallout 3, and then I've played all of them since then. But Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas are really good, and Fallout 4 not so much. But New Vegas is probably one of my top favorite games of all time. So When I heard that they were making a series, I was like, you know, cool. Let's see what happens, because, you know, video game series, like, they're very hit or miss, usually miss. And then, you know, Jonathan Nolan was attached, which is great. But I was still a little skeptical. I didn't love what I saw in the trailers. I thought it was fine. And then, I don't know, I just, going into it, I saw the first episode, and like, it was just okay for me. I think I sent you a message on our TV chat, and I was like, yeah, this is solid, like, it's okay. I wasn't blown away by the first episode, and I think partly it's because they were doing a lot of story building and character development. It's just slow paced, and we're stuck in the vault for most of it, if not all of it. So I thought it was okay. What was your expectations kind of going into it, and how did the first episode hit?
You know, we touched on it before. I thought it was going to be more like Twisted Metal, and now I think that these video game adaptations have been like on an upswing. I mean, look at Sonic. Yeah. I mean, part three is about to come out. They're going to come out with Knuckles on Paramount. That series.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, you know, they've been doing a good job. But I thought it was going to be a little bit more like Twisted Metal. That first episode, to me, it's funny because I saw it differently. It really grabbed me because of the Cooper character.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing his backstory. And then kind of knowing that actor, because I like that actor.
Yeah, he's great.
And knowing that he was also the ghoul. And like,
right.
how did he get to that point? So right there, you're kind of like locked in and like, oh man, I need to know how he got from this to that, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, that first episode is like the first chapter of those video games where you start off in the vault and you get maybe a little backstory and then there's a minor plot twist and then you go outside the vault. And that's kind of what happened here.
Were you satisfied with like the little Easter eggs to the game and stuff? Haven't played it?
Yeah. I mean, I thought they did the Easter eggs really well. So the whole Fallout world is so expansive, it's so big that it's hard to call out Easter eggs because they're everywhere. The whole world is an Easter egg. Unlike a show like Twisted Metal, for example, that takes place in this world, but it's a different adaptation, so there's more Easter eggs in that game, more obvious Easter eggs in that show, I think, because it's based in like a fictional world, but they're adapting the characters into this other kind of world, whereas like Fallout is Fallout, and like here's the real Fallout in real life. I thought it was a little bit different, but I think the use of, you know, I guess if you want to call them Easter eggs, let's just say like the gaming elements part of it. You know, I think in the first episode, you see one of the raiders, you know, the bad guys that come in and start killing everybody. He has like a little pump that he inhales. I don't know if you notice it. It's not noticeable, but he pumps it before he attacks somebody. And so that's called a jet. You pick it up in the video game and it gives you like an attack boost for like 10 seconds. So before you're about to get into beef, you take one of those. The stuff that, you know, I sent you a screenshot of the computer hacking, the way they take the stem packs, which is the needle that heals you. The little Pip-Boy, the wrist gadget that they all carry. And even in the episode where the ghoul pretty much kills all the bad guys in Philly, and they like start splattering. So that's a nod to the video game as well. That's called a perk. So you can like have a perk that anytime you kill someone, their body just like gets blown to pieces. That's called like the Bloody Mess perk or something like that. But I thought all the video game references, they used them in a way that, you know, they weren't really winking at the audience. And I thought that was really smart. They use it in a way that was more respectful. So if you're someone like you who's just coming in, you don't feel like you're missing out on anything because the show really just focuses on the world as is and the characters. So there's a lot of things that I caught that you probably didn't, but you don't even get the sense that you're missing out on anything because they don't have that winking, the sort of wink at the audience moments like a lot of Marvel movies do, for example, or Twisted Metal, a show like that has a lot of those. And I think that subtlety for me goes a long way because it just lets me enjoy the story.
Are we like, you know, getting into like a little spoilerish, or you want to keep it clean?
Yeah, let's get a spoilerish. I think the whole season is out at this point, so we can discuss some of the details of the story and what happens.
I was a little confused at certain points. I thought, you know, when they first get that ghoul, Cooper, and he's underground and he's got those bags of, like, whatever radioactive material feeding him,
mm-hmm.
I thought that's how you became a ghoul, and that's why he was, like, over 200 years old. But then, later on, we find other people that are just, like, wandering in ghouls, but they're not getting any kind of special, like, I guess they start to deteriorate if they don't take that special liquid.
Yeah, so I'm not a Fallout expert, but that seems to be different from the games. So in the games, the ghouls there's different types, and depending on how long they've been exposed to the surface world. Now, much of the surface world is under total radiation or different levels of radiation. And depending on their proximity to the bomb, like the reason he became a ghoul was because of his proximity to the bombs dropping. He survived, but ultimately the radiation poison got to him and he became a ghoul. He uses the drugs. This is not in the video games. Using the drugs to keep himself alive, that's not in the games. And the ghouls that got a lot of exposure, they become feral. Those are the feral ghouls that you see in the shopping mall that are kept in the freezers, where they just like attack and feed you, and feed on you, rather. But there are ghouls in the game that are like scientists, or they're citizens, or they're just regular people, just like the ghoul himself.
So he was taking that medication to not go feral.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to his buddy that he ran into, that he put out of his misery.
Exactly.
That guy just didn't have the medicine. So when they ran into those people at the supermarket, he had like a stockpile of that medicine now.
Yeah, yeah. In addition to a whole bunch of other drugs and alcohol that he just took for
yeah, yeah.
fun.
He's, when she shot him with the trank dart, he was like, oh, darling, that's a little drop in a big pool of drugs.
Yeah.
I liked him. I liked him a lot. I liked the duality of, like, you know, showing his humanity side and then showing him. And he's still in there, but he's so tainted by what happened that he's such a, like, a completely different person, but you still catch hints of who he was in there.
Yeah.
I thought at the very last episode, it was such a beautiful, like, little nod when she put her mother out of misery because her mom was a ghoul or whatever.
Yeah.
And he saw that, and he was like, damn, like, where this girl came from. Because she was getting on him for putting his friend out of misery.
Yeah,
she thought he was like a complete monster. Now she's doing it. So he had that look of like, kind of like being proud, like, oh man, she's grown up. But also at the same point, like disappointed that, damn, this is what she has to do now. Like, this is the kind of world that she lives in. And he did such a wonderful job showing that. Like, I think it was just really well done.
Yeah, and I think that goes to, I think it was the first or second episode where, you know, the scientist whose heads they ultimately take, he questions that about her. He basically says, are you going to be the same person and want the same things after you've been here, up here for a while? So yeah. That's when that moment, you know, in addition to what you're saying with the ghoul, that moment also comes back where she, I mean, that's character development, obviously, so. But it's just a nice, nice way to do it and tie it into the main plot.
And she was really good. Coop was really good. The one who got me, man, and I really enjoyed watching. No, I enjoyed it.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought he did a standout job was the kid that played Maximus.
Yeah, I think I didn't like his character, but I just thought his acting was just on another level.
Yeah,
right?
he was such, it was such a fine line of playing like this jokey type character. Not joke, like he wasn't joking, but he was so like unassuming, like timid, scared, to where he really had to stand up and be this, like, this person that he wanted to be. He
yeah.
played it so well. Like, man, I was blown away by this guy that played Maximus. I thought he did a wonderful job. And every time he was on screen, and the way he talked, to me,
yeah.
like, so I love comics, right? So to me, he was like Clark Kent and Superman. But he played the Clark Kent so well. Like, when he talked to her, when he was like really, when he was like fanboying in the suit, and he was like super juiced.
Yeah.
And then when, like, you, it would, like, his colors showed, and he knew how to control it that well, and he's messing up left and right. Like, he just did I was really blown away. That guy who played Maximus did a wonderful job.
Yeah, I agree. He didn't have a very likable character to start for the first couple episodes. But you do kind of, I think a good turnaround point was where he meets his, is it a scribe? What do you call those guys?
Oh, yeah. I think it's scribe or something that's assigned to him.
Yeah. Where it was the guy who was initially bullying him. And he confesses, he's like, yeah, when I first got there, everybody was kicking my ass. And then there's a new guy that came and I got them to kick his ass. And like, he's just talking about how bad he felt for doing that. And Maximus kind of begins to open up and they have a really funny relationship. Like, they have really funny scenes together. And then when he takes off the armor, you know, that relationship goes awry. But I think that was a good turning point for Maximus's character, and in terms of just like his likability on screen, and like allowing him to go forward and just see with the audience seeing another side of him.
Yeah, I think he definitely had a bunch of these choices where he could have gone left or right, and he started making the right choices. He started doing what was good. But there's confusion again, the scribe, right? So the scribe got his foot stepped on.
Squire, that's what it is.
Squire. He got his foot stepped on.
that was hilarious.
That weird vampire-ish doctor with the medicine gave him something, and that thing that he gave him turned him into a ghoul.
Yeah.
So that's what's confusing about this.
Yeah, so he gave... I don't know what that is. Again, like, that's not in the game. The game has so much like weird science and experimentation and crazy stuff in it that this, although it's not in the game, it feels canon to the game. So he gives him this medicine that basically turns him into a ghoul. It heals his foot immediately. Also, like, that shot when he first takes off his boot and his toe is like dangling.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit. But yeah, and then he gets shot in the neck with an arrow, and he's like, how the hell am I still alive? And then they say, well, you just turned it, that guy turned you into a ghoul. Yeah, I guess, you know, they can kind of take liberty with those kind of things in the show.
And there was another part, too, that I was really confused on. So, I had no idea what going into this, what was going on at first. You know, it took me like a couple episodes to like get my footing. And then by the time like the big reveal happened with the corporations, I was just starting to understand what was going on. So it was kind of like a surprise to me. But what threw me is, so I know that they initiated the bombing, right? It's implied that, well, they were saying at the board, like, you know, we have a way to make sure that our right. shareholders make money. Now, when they did that, that was around the time of Coop, when he was normal. Now, mm-hmm. Coop's been alive for 200 years. The other guy, the girl's father, Lucy, her father, was like an employee at the Fallout, one of the shelters,
at Vault-Tec.
Vault-Tec. Now, he was put into cryo, so that's why he's alive right now. And Lucy was his daughter when he came out of cryo. Now, Coop, he's been, like, hibernating with the medicine, that's why he's still alive. What about the kid? The kid Maximus was a little kid when the bomb went off. Was there a second series of bombings? Is that what killed her mom?
Yes, I think that's what that... What they meant was that when the mom left the vault and went out and they rebuilt Shady Sands, I guess with this technology, they had electricity, they had like a town. Lucy's dad wanted to basically not have a competitor. Their whole thing is about like whoever controls this energy controls everything, controls the world. So in an effort to sort of take that back, my understanding is they bombed that town and, you know, took back the technology. But yeah, I agree with you. I was a little confused about that.
And it's not just like a new form of energy. They're talking about straight up cold fusion. They're talking about cold fusion. And so there was a series of bombs that started this all up to get people, because I know they were talking about during the peace treaties. And at first I thought they were going to attack the peace treaty to break that up, but they didn't care if the peace treaty went through or not because they were going to drop a bomb either way.
Right.
That forced people into the shelters. All those different corporations that were working with Vault-Tec we're going to get their own vaults and be able to do whatever experiments they want on those vaults. And then I guess the dad, working with Vault-Tec, had access to like a nuke. And so when the mom bounced, and then he did this. And then Maximus was in that town where the mom was, and he just happened to be in the refrigerator, Indiana Jones style, and he got saved.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in the game, there are additional nukes, so I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, it did feel a little bit, it did confuse me in terms of the timeline, because I was like, wait, they just blew this up recently or 200 years ago? I'm still not 100% sure, so I may have to double check
that. Makes sense if that's the way, because I was like, how is Maximus then alive for 200 years and he looks like a kid still? Like, but that makes sense. If it was when the father bombed the mom, he had already been pulled out of cryo, so it was more recent. So that would make sense.
So
And the other thing too that was like a little plot hole for me was them walking around, and I guess the Earth is no longer, it doesn't have radiation all over the place.
It's not all over, but many places have radiation.
And they made a good point where she drank the water, she got radiation poisoning.
Yep.
Because the water was radiated.
Was poisoned.
Yeah.
And then Maximus gives her rat away, which is like, again, in the game, when you get poisoned or you're poisoned, your radiation levels get too high, rat away will take that down. So that was also something cool from the game itself. They do that a lot, where they incorporate the gaming elements like seamlessly into the show. Again, without drawing so much attention to it, but it's just, we're kind of like, the audience just accepts it. I thought that was a nice touch there.
I thought that scene where the Raiders came in. So the Raiders are kind of like what kicked the whole thing off, because if the Raiders never got into Vault 31. None of this would have been exposed, and Lucy would have never left the vault. And
yeah,
that scene where the Raiders came in, because the Raiders really, by doing what they did, exposed the shenanigans that was going on in Vault 31 to that kid, the son.
My understanding was that that woman, Moldover, she had Lucy's mom's Pip-Boy let the Raiders in, and they created all the chaos so that they can then sort of like reset, if that makes sense.
And also grab the father for the codes for the cold fusion.
Right. Once the father was gone, I mean, yeah, well, because you're right. So they wanted Hank for the codes for the cold fusion. And then that made Vault 33 kind of like, it forced them to sort of reset what was going on down there.
And then, so when they would do the great trade, and they would trade somebody from Vault 31 to Vault 33, that was them uncryoing somebody that was in management at Vault-Tec in the past.
Yep.
Gotcha. And that's why when the son was going through the computer and he was seeing, and it was always the last person in charge was from Vault 33 that transferred to, from Vault 31 that transferred to Vault 33.
Yeah, well, in the records, it was actually Vault 32. Vault 31 was never even mentioned, but that was the actual vault where things were coming from.
Gotcha.
Right? Because the brain, who's that guy Bud, he was the one that was releasing the cryo bodies. They would move into Vault 33, and ultimately that person would become the overseer, which is the person in charge. And they would use Vault 33 as a breeding pool.
And the blonde chick that had the fork stabbed in her eye, she came from Vault 31. She was management at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
So she knew what was going on.
She did know what was going on, yeah. I'm curious about her story. We didn't really learn much about her.
Yeah, because like at first, you know, I thought she was an ally, the way she was talking to Hank's son.
The brother, yeah.
And then she was just, I don't know, she was like a mystery. And then you found out that she actually came from that vault, so she had to be management as well. And that fight scene was like amazing, like it was pretty, pretty, like...
pretty brutal.
Good, it was brutal, it was good.
Yeah.
And the Jell-O. What's up with them in the Jell-O? Is that part of the video game too?
No, I think, yeah, I don't know what's up with the Jell-O. And then, I think ultimately, I think her name is Betty. She ultimately gets, she's the one that ultimately gets the rat poison into the Raiders and just kills them all, just to put that thing to bed. I think that's what happened there.
And it was nice at the end. I know somebody said that that scene where Hank's walking in the suit towards the sunset, and I think that's New Vegas or whatever. And that scene is like iconic from one of the games. I don't know if it was the second or third game.
It might be not from the third game, but maybe one or two. But yeah, we're headed toward New Vegas, where in the game, I don't know where they are in the timeline, but in the game, New Vegas is run by one of the executives in that meeting. From one of
Okay.
the other executives, Mr. House.
And what was that other vault? Not 31, 32, 33. That other one that they
Vault
had, like,
4 or something?
yeah, it was, and everything was kind of strange there.
Yeah, that was just so in the games, all the vaults vary. They're all like different experimentations. Some are normal and healthy, and others are completely, psychological experience, scientific experiments. And so that one was definitely some kind of scientific experiments going on with the people. Like that guy had one eye.
It was definitely like gene manipulation, mutation, because that's where the water creature came from.
Right. So they attribute that to like some of the creatures that live in the wasteland now. He's like, yeah, that guy was my third cousin.
So that's a totally different corporation that was working with Voltec that
Could be.
got their set of
Yeah,
vaults.
but like you don't in the games, you don't get any of the backstory. All any of the backstory might come from just like computer logs that you have to sit there and read. And some of them have messages from like from the overseer to this person, and you have to read all the messages back and forth to sort of put the puzzle together, see what happened there. Others have, very little information, and you kind of have to just guess on what happened there. Maybe you show up and people are just dead. Like they showed up in Vault 32 and everyone was just dead, and it said like death to management. You don't really know what happens. But every vault is different. Some of them are extremely dangerous. Others are, they're good for looting. You go in there, you find weapons, you find health, or find whatever. So that's a cool element in the game is when you find these vaults, you don't really know what to expect inside from the society that either lives there or used to live there, or
And what was that weird ram head creature that he walked by, that skeleton, when he was going to like New Vegas? That's part of the video game.
yeah. So that's called a Deathclaw. It's probably the most dangerous enemy in the game. They're these just massive, strong, reptilian-looking things with huge claws. They kill you almost instantly. So we see a. I'm surprised they didn't pull, and I'm glad they sort of kept a lot of cards close to the vest for season one because we didn't see almost any creatures. We didn't see any of the iconic creatures from the game. So we didn't see like the rat scorpions, we didn't see the death claws, and a few others, even like different groups and enemy types and all this stuff. So there's a lot that they can still throw at you. Rat
But
scorpions are
there was
basically just
enough to
like,
keep you. Oh, sorry.
yeah. No, I'm just saying like rat scorpions are another one. They're just like these, radiation scorpions. Some are as like as small as a dog, others are as big as like a small car.
They did enough to entice you, like with that water creature, and especially the roaches, and how he was
Yeah.
explaining the evolution of the roaches. Like, they definitely did enough to like entice you to be like, well, what else is out there?
There's so much stuff out there. There's like the radiation ghouls that live in like underground sewers. They glow in the dark. So there's a lot where they can go from here. New Vegas will be interesting. That whole world is weird, but the story is amazing. I don't know what they're gonna do with that. But yeah, I really like what they've done with it. Even like the nice like wide open shots of someone just walking, because a lot of the game is just, you're walking from place to place and there's nothing around. It's just a wasteland. Maybe you'll see like a guy trying to like farm some corn or like sell you something on the side of the road, or maybe you just get attacked by a giant monster out of nowhere. But the world is very feels very empty sometimes, and they did a good job capturing that. Yeah, it was dope. I was blown away. I was impressed with the whole show for sure.
I think I saw an article earlier today. I was just checking it out from Variety. And a second season is almost guaranteed because of
Oh,
some
yeah.
California tax credit. It was like $25 million tax credit for them to film somewhere in California. I think it was LA. So
Damn.
they're already like, they're already pushing that through for Amazon Prime. So I think a second season's pretty much guaranteed.
Yeah, they left a lot of questions unanswered. One of which is, where is Hank going? He stole the Brotherhood armor. He's going to New Vegas. Is he going to go meet up with Mr. House? He also has the technology. There's a question about Coop's family. Did they survive? If so, they probably did. There's a question of what's going to happen with Norm, right? He's still in the vault, in Vault 31. Is he going to get frozen? Is he going to be able to get out? And then my question that I didn't get was the Moldover, how did she survive the apocalypse? Was she cryogenically frozen as well? But she wasn't with them.
Yeah, I don't. She was old too. She had to be like out there too. She was what?
She aged, yeah, but she not 200 years. Like she had to be cryogenically frozen as well or something.
Yeah, something, because she would definitely be a lot older if she was
I mean, she'd
not
be
something
dead.
with like some kind of enhancement like cryo or something.
Yeah.
And she wasn't a ghoul. She definitely wasn't a
Right.
ghoul.
She definitely wasn't a ghoul. No, she's the leader of the NCR, which is a huge, that's the New California Republic, which is like a wannabe U.S. government kind of organization.
And our poor boy Maximus and the Brotherhood, they're gonna have the cold fusion right now. And this guy is a hero.
Yeah.
He's a hero.
Yeah.
He's like, no, it's not like that. But it's
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
who writes history? The victors write history. And he was like the one last one standing. And they were like, you killed Moldurv, and now he's got this cold fusion power for the Brotherhood.
Right. And I felt like he was trying to leave the Brotherhood. But right when he tried to get out, they kind of knighted him right there almost.
Well, that guy, yeah, I mean, right now he's definitely going to be one. But the guy, the leader of the Brotherhood, kind of brought him in and was like talking to him. And that other one, that his friend, kind of went to a huge extreme with the razor in the boot.
Yeah.
Like that was rough to watch too. Like you were
Yeah.
saying before, with the little toe dangling, like they had some scenes in this show that really had like, it was like a little tough to watch.
Yeah, I think the violence and just the weirdness and the humor was unexpected. Like, and I'm really glad they went there because Fallout should be weird, a weird, violent, funny place. It's dystopian, but it's not, and it's sad, but it also has like a this weird, I don't know, like property about it. And when she is like saying that, her and her cousin can't have sex anymore. I was just like, wait, are they just the fact that they were cool with just being able to laugh at, the main character admitting that she has sex with her cousin is
Yeah, she's
crazy
like,
to me. That's
the
crazy to me.
cousin stuff can't keep going on. Oh, I forgot what the exact phrase was, but yeah.
Because like that's something usually if it's used, that type of humor, it's usually like a tertiary character that you feel comfortable laughing at or putting down, not the main protagonist, you know? So I thought that was a bold choice, and it kind of worked because I know a lot of people mentioned that as a just like a funny moment. But they had a lot of other funny humor throughout, which is, you know, just like another reason, like they nailed the hell out of this. And I feel like one of the main reasons, because they built it, you know, they created it in a way that it's not like, hey, do you remember this video game? Here's all the cool stuff you remember from this video game. It's like, here's a dope show based on this world that, you know, some people created. The ultimate polar opposite would be this Mario Brothers video game, which has like no story or plot, but every scene is like a million things you can point out that you sort of familiar with, Easter eggs. This show is like show and story first, and if you happen to see, you know, somebody drinking a Nuka-Cola bottle and you think that's cool, great. But like, we're not gonna put a spotlight on it.
It was definitely a nice blend of like weird, funny, but grounded in like these deep storylines that were going on.
Yeah.
The main protagonist with Lucy and her mother and finding out what her father was really into. Cooper and him trying to get his family and where he came from and what he became. He was a gunslinger as an actor, and he fought in the war.
And an army vet.
And he was in the original, like those big Brotherhood mechanics.
Yeah, the T-45.
Yeah, and to see him now actually become like a gunslinger for real life as a ghoul, like seeing his transition. So it was a lot of like, there was enough meat to keep everything pretty grounded. It wasn't like a laugh out loud like Twisted Metal, like all the time. But it was a nice balance. Yeah.
It was a great balance. And the story is actually a mix. It's almost exactly the same story as Fallout 3, where you grow up in a vault, your dad suddenly disappears, and then you go out into the open world to look for him, and it ultimately becomes, you know, about, in Fallout 3, it's about like this water purification machine that's going to save the wasteland with clean water. This one is about energy, so it's like the same thing, just like another MacGuffin kind of thing. So it's very similar to the story of Part 3, but I think it still very much carries its own way. And they say that the show is actually canon and part of the lore of the video games as well.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
It had some really heartfelt moments. Like Norm, you know, early on in the season when she was like, why don't you come with me? And he was like, you know, I'm a chicken. You know, I'm a coward. But, you know, I really appreciate you asking. You know, like...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was like a good moment. That was a really cool moment. And it showed you a lot between the two of them. Like, they had a lot of good, like, writing in there. That said a lot with a very little.
Do you think, my hunch is that Norm, the brother, he's going to ultimately become the villain of the show?
Wow. I didn't like him at first, but as the show went on, I started liking him more and more.
Me too.
I don't know. I mean, that's a good point. He's stuck in that vault now. Maybe.
He's stuck in the vault. You know, his instinct to want to kill the Raiders because let's do to them what they would have done to us. And then when Betty talks to him, she says something like, you know, when little boys are bad, some of them will just like piss all over the wall, but some of them will do like really dangerous things. And then she kind of cautions him on his behavior. And I thought that maybe was a subtle hint that he might be up for like a bigger part that will be a counter to whatever Lucy is. At the end, they'll have sort of opposing views by the next time they meet.
And I could definitely see him playing a villain role because he was in Ender's Game, and he was like kind of like not the main villain, but he was like, you know, pushing Ender around. He was villainous.
Oh, he was a douchebag. Wasn't he in also, what else did I see this guy in? Wasn't he in that Sylvester? Yeah, he was in Samaritan. Was Sylvester
Oh, I didn't see that. Really?
Yeah, you should watch that. It's pretty good.
But that's a good point. Yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah, I could see him becoming. I mean, I guess like the big villain right now is just the corporations, Vol-Tec and the other ones.
Yeah, yeah.
And the father turned out to be like a horrible person. Somebody who you thought was like a good old boy, and he ends up being like one of the worst of them all.
And I'm glad that he didn't have any redeeming qualities, because oftentimes these shows will try to give these characters and justify their bad decisions with some sort of redeeming quality. Like, I did it because there was this conflict. And this guy, no, they were just like, he works for Vol-Tec and he's just an asshole. And I just love that. Like, he's just a bad guy. He's been a bad guy. Because he's just part of this corporate culture, and he buys into all this stuff. Same with Cooper's wife. Like, she just buys into that.
Yeah.
You know, she gave that whole speech about, like, protecting families and all this after she sort of looked up at some mysterious figure on top. But I think she just buys into it. I think she's just part of that corporate culture.
It's crazy that the whole thing behind it was just to make money for the shareholders. Like, that was...
I know, yeah. It's pretty extreme, but...
Time is the biggest weapon, but time is also the greatest ally. It was, like, such a good good use of that. It was really good.
Yeah. All right, we'll leave it there. Any final thoughts?
No, just a good show. I'm so glad. It's been a crazy couple of weeks, so to get it all in was... it took some time, but it was definitely well worth it. I enjoyed it a lot.
I wish they would have rolled it out week by week so I can have more time to sit with it, because now it's gone. I might rewatch it over the next few weeks. But yeah. All right. We'll leave it there, guys. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Peace.
Peace.